Around the NFL Podcast. The Big Bad Blogger Boys.
Welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast presented by Truist. My name is Dan Hansis. I come to you from a room filled with heroes. Mark Sessler, Greg Rosenthal, and Patrick Claibon. What is up, boys?
Super Bowl week. Super Bowl week. Listen. This is the week where we take what we normally do and we just try harder. You thought we were trying hard before. Now we're trying harder.
All right. And on the subject of trying harder, we all wish Wes was with us right now. And we've talked about this over the course of the season. He brings in the Hey Dan off the top. Until Wes is back, somebody else has to step up. This is a leadership move. And Patrick, you're a frequent guest, but I don't expect you to be that guy. It's got to come from Greg or Mark ultimately.
Wait, hold on.
It's usually
me,
but when we have a guest, I kind of let see if they want to jump in.
It feels odd. It feels difficult to do it as the guest in this point. And so I was just, as you said, Dan, I was going to leave it up to
Claibon's not a guest, though. At this point, Claibon's not a guest. He's you know.
Well, he's an honorary hero, but semi-regular at the same time, he can't be expected.
I mean, I just know that if you're one of these people on NFL.com who logged on to like a gigantic motherboard computer in your house to watch this, you're thinking this show is off to a roaring start here.
I do think about that sometimes, because I don't know how many podcasts you guys listen to, but I do find myself fast forwarding like the first 3 or 4 minutes of a lot of podcasts where they're just kind of like screwing around before they really get to it. And I do wonder, you know, I think I would like our first 3 or 4 minutes, but I do wonder how many people are like that, like me, just fast forwarding until they get to the real stuff. I don't know.
I always listen to every second of a podcast. I even listen to the ads. I actually slow down the playback on the ads so I could really soak in. We don't do ads for some reason on our show with the NFL, but for most people, that's a component of doing a podcast. Anyway, Mark, I look to you. I've worked with you for over a decade now. I would like you to step into that void until Wes returns. I'm just going to ask for it. You don't have to help me, but... I will,
but it's a sharp right turn from the semi-tradition we had established over the past couple of months. And I thought, you know, Greg, he's been a management figure before. He understands adult responsibility. And today he just went totally silent. So it's like, quick, now it's Mark's issue to deal with. Well, not thankful for that.
All right. So we are a well-oiled machine, obviously, as we hit Super Bowl week. And yes, this is it. There's a big game coming up. On Sunday, the Kansas City Chiefs and Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Patrick Mahomes against Tom Brady. Incredible stuff. And, you know, on that subject, and we got a great show coming up. Very excited. A special guest, a guest that, you know what, it's one of those moments. It's when like, okay, we're doing something right, because we got Gene Deckerhoff coming up later on the show, the voice of the Bucks. But before we get to Gene, before we get to the news, including one of the biggest quarterback trades in the history of our league, let's share some opening Super Bowl thoughts. Greg, get us going.
Yeah, this was the same show a year ago that we were on a boat. It's a controversial show. I don't know if we're going to have as much excitement in this show, as much controversy, especially when my opening thought is just about Patrick Mahomes, and this feels like the most obvious hill to be on. But I just want to like appreciate this moment with Mahomes now in his second Super Bowl, in his third season, because we kind of assume, okay, this is just what it's going to be from now on. We don't know that. I mean, we kind of thought that with Brett Favre when he won 3 straight MVPs, he'd be in the Super Bowl a lot. We thought with Dan Marino, you know, not that I was around back then, but maybe the only quarterback that has started his career as fast as Patrick Mahomes, when he got to the Super Bowl in his second season, like, okay, this guy will be back in. Like, we don't know. But this is the greatest player I've ever seen. It's the player just in terms of pure talent that's given me like the most joy of just like, I can't believe I get to watch this guy play football. Of course, getting to see him do it against Brady is like amazing, but I'm just not assuming it's always going to happen. Like, this is his third season and it's the third time he's gotten into a monster game, the second Super Bowl, but against this awesome Todd Bowles defense where it's boom or bust, like, I'm just going to like enjoy the Mahomes of it all, soak it in. That's what I'm looking forward to.
In fairness, there is a lot of assumption on your part with that particular player. You said about 2 years ago, he's the greatest quarterback of all time. So I would think you're already spinning forward to another.
Just 12, the greatest player I've seen, but sometimes it's not all about the quarterback. Things can happen, and who knows what could happen in his future. But we got him right now. We got him right now in an amazing game with him at his peak. So I'm looking forward.
I find it like slightly shade throwing that Greg just went on like a 4 minute speech about Patrick Mahomes when the quarterback he's playing, Tom Brady, from his favorite team, essentially made his young adulthood into adulthood a football paradise. I don't know how Tom Brady would respond to that.
The way you phrased that, Mark, makes it sound like Tom Brady is Greg's dad.
Like, well, he birthed
the adult role.
In some ways, he is.
I do think about Brady in his third Super Bowl and kind of what the difference were then. It is crazy to think about. Like, no one thought Tom Brady was one of the five best Super Bowl, one of the best quarterbacks in the league entering 2004 in that playoff run, which is where I think Brady started to go to another level, was that playoffs and then basically every spot onward. But like, no one even thought he was a top five quarterback back then, like in the entire NFL, like at the time, not just accomplishments, but like that year. And now to think where Mahomes is in his fourth season, it's just crazy.
Yeah, Mahomes hit the ground running as the best quarterback in football in his second year. If you really listen, we're not gonna have issues with Andy Reid. Everything's played out pretty well, but he kept Alex Smith as the quarterback for the entirety of Mahomes' rookie year. You get a feeling he probably would have pulled a Justin Herbert if he got that opportunity in year one, but I guess we'll never really know. All right, Mark, your opening thoughts of Super Bowl week, let's go Claybon next.
Sure,
your opening thoughts of Super Bowl week.
Okay, well, fitting that I follow Greg, and it's no surprise that we're kind of on the same wavelength here. And my thoughts kind of the same as it always is coming into Super Bowl week. And it's wonderful, right, that we get to invest so much energy and intensity into this game. And the winner deserves all the praise, right? You dream about winning a Super Bowl when you're a child. You dream about playing in a Super Bowl. But once it's over, and especially if it's close, like last year, we need to remember that the winners aren't, like, selected by destiny or, you know, picked by some deity itself. We play the game, and we remember the game for a reason. And I know after the fact, you can look at a team like the 49ers from 2019 and say, you know, they had holes X, Y, and Z, and they didn't do this, and they didn't. But they were still a really good team, and they deserve to be remembered as a good team. And I don't think it's going to be that much of a problem now that we have a Super Bowl winning quarterback with a Super Bowl MVP, and we have, of course, the greatest Super Bowl winning quarterback of all time on the other side. But my thing is, if you take all those things away, Patrick Mahomes is still Patrick Mahomes, and Tom Brady is still Tom Brady. And Bruce Arians said last week that he needs a Super Bowl win to validate his career. And it's just such a defeated way of looking at sports. And I think sometimes we look at these teams that have won a conference championship, they've accomplished so much, and they're remembered as losers. And the guys who wind up on the other side of the scoreboard get to have chicken banquets for the rest of their lives and talk about all these memories they've shared with their teammates. And the other guys don't get to do that. And I just think that that's an unfair level of importance that we place on winning this game, even though it's great to win the game.
Well, the loser gets the chicken banquet. The winner gets the steak banquets going forward. But, you know, there's an old thing. I think Francesa back in the old days used to say, you know, it's much worse to get to the Super Bowl and lose it than to just lose in the conference title game. Which
I agree.
I think because you have to stick with that being on that stage. I think that's one thing, Claybon, like, it's so amplified. This is the center of like American culture around this game. So the stakes are so high to lose that game, and conversely to win it. It just changes your life because football and this country and the Super Bowl is such a big thing. It's not just like any other game.
Well, and it is what Arians has coached. You know, he does have a Super Bowl as an assistant, I believe. But you know, you believe him too. This is what you want, and it's unfortunate, but it's one of the great things about sports too, is that there's no ambiguity. Listening to players and coaches talk about it that have lost like one Super Bowl, like you believe them that that never leaves them, and that's unfortunate, but it is part of the deal. That this is why he's been coaching all this time, is to win a game like this.
Mark, I want to tee you up by letting the audience know what we learned right before we started, that Mark watched 2 hours of NFL's opening night press conferences on Monday. 2 hour coverage. He was plugged in, so no one is going to have a better insight on this week than Mr. Sessler. Mark.
Well, I mean, number one, I thought that we were all doing that. Signals crossed. I guess I took the bullet on that front, but I would say
I watched part of it.
All right, so Greg watched part of it, but I
well, Greg's TV is always on NFL Network.
Right, I mean, Greg,
that.
It's just like passing by. Yeah, NFL Network well. Locked on 24/7 in Greg's house. So, I mean, here's the thing. Like, this whole season, I think, has brought forth some really good things. I don't think we get the less access for reporters is a nightmare. And there are a lot of things about media night. If you've ever been there, and we've been there to 10 in a row, it's an absolute circus. You can't hear yourself think. But there are quiet conversations with players and especially the coaches that I always thought were a great setup for the week. And for me, I know that you can go find some of that stuff, but that's what I missed. But what I liked was the compact nature of how they did it in 2 hours. And part of me was like, this was so much, this was so far more painless than the ones that we've been to. And I'm not trying to complain about them. I wonder if they would ever think about tweaking in general some of the media approach to the NFL season. And it would, for me, media night, it would start right there. But I will say one other thing. I love the coaching matchup of Andy Reid versus Bruce Arians. And they spoke last night, and I love what they had to say and just be able to concentrate on the two of them. I remember when Wes and I once went to cover the Harbaugh brothers, right? The press conference for that. And it was like we were watching like two inaugurations at the same time. It was so overdone. And Wes and I were thinking, what are we possibly supposed to write about this event? It's so overblown. I just like taking some of this and putting it a little bit more perspective. It's a game. It's a few days from now. These people can speak and we do the game. I don't know if I need to have, you know, Lady Gaga like shouting from the rooftops while I'm trying to hear 8 other people talk. Anyways.
Listen, I you are more of a minimalist by nature in a lot of ways. I love that the Super Bowl is big and gaudy and overblown. That's one of the things I love about the entire operation. So I disagree. Even the media night, I haven't been to the last couple. I kind of got out of that assignment.
Well, there you go.
But when I first started covering it, though, I thought it was like a thrill. I felt like I was in the middle of everything. And I do, you mentioned that, like, it's not so much the guys on the risers at media night that matter, because that's when it gets stinky and the body odors and it's really compact. And in a pandemic world, you wonder if that's something that needs to exist. But it is those finding the defensive coordinator sitting off on his own on the bottom level of the arena, and you can get up to him and get 10 minutes with him on your own. Like, all that stuff, that melts away if you turn this into a big Zoom call every year.
Well, but that would be my bigger point. Like, I'm not trying to, like, take a shot at the event. I think they could tone it down. But the reporting opportunities are pretty special at that kind of an event. One last little thing, and then I will shut up. Blinding Lights, we get it. The Weeknd sings it, and he's going to be singing it this Sunday. They played it for, I'm not kidding, I think 35 minutes during that presentation. I don't know what the strategy is. If I'm the Weeknd, I don't play that song during the Super Bowl just to throw everyone for a massive loop, because it's like I've heard the song 460 times now. I really like it, but, I mean, it's like Hotel California. I've heard the song. I really liked it. And now I'm like, I don't need to hear it for the next 3 years. Now I'm done.
This feels like a good.
From this, how he feels.
Yeah.
Well, exactly.
My takeaway from this is Mark would enjoy, I think, opening night in any year, even if it was pre-pandemic, post-pandemic, if you were just watching it at home on your TV. I think that
I was going to say,
the key for Mark.
Well, it almost sounds like Mark's all set with going to Super Bowls going forward. I don't know if that's in play right now.
No, I like a nice, quiet hotel room. I mean, I'm missing that right now. We've got kids running up and down the hallway.
Okay, so things I didn't see coming in the last 10 months, other than the global pandemic and everything that's come with that, and it's certain political events that have unfolded. It's been a weird 10 months, let's put it that way. One thing I haven't seen coming, I have a whole new appreciation of Thomas Edward Patrick Brady Jr. Never thought that would happen. Never in a million years as a Jets fan, tortured by the Patriots. But I find myself rooting for him this season, especially during this playoff run. To me, he's the biggest story of the Super Bowl by far. And I think it's truly incredible you could play for one team for 20 years and have all the success he had in New England. Leave in free agency, do the Joe Montana to the Chiefs move. And if he did that, and he went to the Chiefs, and he went to the Bucks, and they went 9-7, and he played pretty good football, and they maybe won a playoff game, and that would have been a really big story about him winning a playoff game, and then getting he got dispatched in the divisional playoffs or even the conference title game. That, to me, would have felt like a success at this stage for a 43-year-old quarterback, and that would have been an acceptable outcome. But instead, he plays at a level this season that has approximated his peak, and he takes this new team to the Super Bowl. And I just think, and you guys, I know, are all on the same page with this, I think, that this is a remarkable sports story. And I think it's building potentially to a storybook finish. Maybe not. And maybe none of these things, but the way the story is being painted, that won't have an outcome on how the game is played. But imagine if Tom Brady does win another Super Bowl, how incredible that would be.
It kind of goes to Claibon's point, too, about remembering the winners. And the comparison of Montana going to the Chiefs is different in terms of age. But they went, I think, 17-8. I just checked quickly when Montana started games. They went to an AFC championship game. And yet, I think in the history books, you think of like, oh, like he led the league in like interception percentage and you know, played really well in the Chiefs. It does go to show like sort of what you remember. And I think the fact that they won this last game, and so much of it is the offensive line and the defense and everything else, and Brady playing extremely well. It's like history, you do end up remembering the guys who get to this game. And especially, you're right, Dan, if they won this game. Man, I just wanted like a lot of points. Just give me the points. All, in the 30s, back and forth. Just like the AFC Championship when it was Patriots-Chiefs in 2018. Last guy with the ball wins. That's the game I want.
On the subject of Tom Brady and his continuing greatness, at age 43. But once upon a time, he said 45 was the goal. He was asked during media day if now he could see a scenario where he plays beyond his 45th birthday. Here's what Brady had to say.
Yeah, definitely. Again, it's a physical sport, and just the perspective I have on that is, you know, you never know kind of when, you know, that moment is, just because it's a contact sport and there's a lot of training that goes into it. And again, it has to be 100% commitment from myself to keep doing it.
It's just 45, Mark. You're right around that age, so.
I'm a little older.
Amazing.
It increases my total respect for him. And I like what you said about Tom Brady, and we're on the same party line there. And I have to wonder in general. I mean, Greg, I get your fascination with Mahomes, and I think I get the nation's fascination with Mahomes. And it shouldn't be taken for granted or normalized what he and the Chiefs are doing, but if you're in your 40s, how are you not rooting for Tom Brady to pull this thing off? I just find him to be – this is one of the most remarkable sports stories of any sport around. This is when the body breaks down for mass chunks of the population. We saw what happened with Brett Favre in year two with the Vikings. It was tough on the eyes. Brady at 45, could he play to 46 or 47? He's the one athlete where I would say – I will not doubt this guy until he literally like locks himself in a storage cabinet away from the NFL, because it's like he's going to keep playing. And he goes to Tampa Bay, and Bruce Arians, it's not hyperbole, the belief he instilled in his teammates and everyone around him triggered this. That's a huge part of this. You don't just plug in any quarterback who's good. This is a Tom Brady effect in Tampa Bay. It's just as powerful as his play itself.
I almost feel uncomfortable because I'm rooting for both teams. It's like no fun to root for both teams.
All right. Men, a major trade went down in the NFL in the last couple days. Detroit Lions send Matthew Stafford to the Los Angeles Rams in exchange for Jared Goff and multiple draft picks. The Lions will receive a third-round pick in 2021, a first-round pick in 2022, and a first-round pick in 2023. It is the first exchange, Patrick Claibon, of former number one overall picks ever since the beginning of the Common Draft era. It all becomes official when the new league year clicks in on March 17th. When you heard the news, Patrick, what was your first takeaway on the deal?
My first takeaway when I heard the news was, oh, God, I have to go turn the camera on and do work. But then I realized that Kyle Montgomery was actually working on Saturday night. We eventually came in on Sunday to do a special edition of NFL Now. But that's all kimono open stuff. My thought was, oh, my gosh, they did it. Les Snead was we were running sound of Les Snead all week last week where he's alluding to this beautiful mystery of what happens with Jared Goff. And we knew through John Wolford starting in the playoff game and potentially starting in the second playoff game if he was healthy, that the relationship between McVay and Goff, the football player, seemed like it was coming to an end. And so they did it. They went and got a quarterback who could perhaps do those things that Jared Goff hasn't done, we'll say. And we don't know what it's ultimately going to look like, but they did it. They're trying. And that's really the dichotomy of the discussion is win now or accrue picks to try to win later. And as a football fan, I'm always going to side with the teams that want to win now because these hypothetical picks, I don't know who these 19-year-olds are or these 18-year-olds that are going to play in 2023, but I know who Matt Stafford is, and I'm excited to watch him play in SoFi next year.
Yeah, I am too. It's just such an interesting trade for so many reasons that they thought Stafford was that much better. And I tend to agree that they had to do something. They couldn't continue along this path with Goff. And so the trade terms are so outrageous that you're taken aback at first. I look at it like Stafford, and especially if you look at all the other offers around the league, was maybe worth a first and a third. And then getting rid of Goff's contract was worth a first. And so, it sounds like a lot together. And I know Goff, he's spoken with Michael Silver, and he's obviously going to be hurt by this. And there's a lot of people who are saying, no, the Lions really wanted Goff. Like, they really view him as a big part of it. That's fine. The entire NFL evaluated Stafford and Goff that was involved in this trade basically like the Rams did. No one wanted Goff. That's why you had to pay that much to get rid of him, and the Rams didn't want to get stuck having him when he had $45 million guaranteed the next 2 years. And a lot of people wanted Stafford, partly because of the contract, because he's not due much money at all over the next 2 years and reportedly doesn't want more money. So he's just going to stay on that contract. So that was part of it. And everyone's critical of the Rams for trading away the picks. I'm somewhere in the middle, but just recognizing that they've done this now for 5 years and they've been one of the best five or six teams in the NFL. So we always say, like, we want teams to think differently. They think differently. They have not cared about first round picks, and it's worked. You can't really argue with the fact that they've been, a top team with this approach, and this gives them a chance to compete next year.
I'm with you because I've had my issues with the Rams since they moved to Los Angeles, but this changed that because I like Les Snead and Sean McVay, A, being on the same page and rolling the dice and being gamblers to get what they want. The mistake would have been to go through another season with this semi-divorce with Jared Goff happening while they have John Wolford and others on the roster. It was becoming too big of a talking point. Les Snead, though, I will say this, because his name is on this thing, and there will be people tracking this for a while, depending on how Stafford does. They gave up a first, a second, and a third to go up and get Goff in the draft. They've given up a third and a first to get rid of him. I mean, by all, take away the Super Bowl year, by all accounts, that's a player that cost a lot of draft capital and mistakes. But at the same time, from a football watching side of it, and this is just me, two of the most annoying quarterback situations in the league have been fixed. Goff in LA was driving me crazy. Matthew Stafford in Detroit felt like the same thing 45 years in a row. I love shaking it up. I have Jared Goff to me fits the Detroit Lions perfectly. Go enjoy yourself as a bridge quarterback. You're in the right city. But the Stafford and the Rams makes them intriguing. There's so much pressure on this team. This is a Super Bowl or bust team. If this goes south, it's going to be very interesting in Los Angeles next season, I do think.
I think you get half of what you want because I don't think Jared Goff in Detroit is going to necessarily be a fun, even if he's a bridge. We'll see how it goes. And
it takes him out of LA, I mean, but yeah.
It takes him out of LA. And I also, I'm not giving out any lollipops to Les Snead because Les Snead was behind and Sean McVay, who was a huge voice in that organization. And ownership, of course, were behind giving Jared Goff a huge contract extension in September 2019. That was not very long ago, even if it feels like a long ago. So this trade was paying for the sins of that contract. I think a lot of people were missing that when it went down. It's like, oh, you're giving up all those draft picks in addition to Goff? Well, they had to. It was the Brock Osweiler trade from a few years back on steroids. And who knows? This does feel like a great experiment for the Rams. Also feels to me desperate, ultimately, that they're going to do this and get Stafford and be like, now we'll win a Super Bowl. Well, I hope you take the next step, because Patrick, you mentioned you never know with first-round picks, but many a titles are built on teams that use the draft wisely, especially their first-round picks. And they drafted Jared Goff first overall in 2016, as we've noted. No first-round pick in 2017, 2018, 2019, 2020, 2021, 2022, and now 2023. Matthew Stafford better stay healthy, or this is going to turn into a trade that potentially gets everybody fired, maybe even on both sides.
Well, you mentioned the draft. In terms of getting the picks, they used their pick on Jared Goff, right? And that didn't work out. So you get it here.
Did it work out or did it not work out? Because he had some big seasons, took him to a Super Bowl. I feel like acting like he was Mark Sanchez or something is not quite fair either.
No, I don't think, but that's what they did on the way out. And maybe perhaps they could have saved the pick in terms of making the trade if they were a little more, hey, yeah, we signed Jared for a reason. We like Jared. Jared's our quarterback. But that's how the Rams didn't feel that way about him. As Greg said, other people in the league didn't feel that way about him. So maybe in less needs eyes, you'd prefer to have a known quantity than another shot at another quarterback.
Right. I mean, Stafford's young, though. I mean, we don't know how good Stafford's going to be with McVay. It'd be interesting.
I would love to know what Anthony Lynn, who was coaching Justin Herbert a couple months ago, went to Detroit to coach Matthew Stafford, and now is coaching Jared Goff. What does Anthony Lynn think about these turn of events? It feels like a step down in terms of your quarterback to work with, in my book.
He didn't get any credit for Justin Herbert, so why is he going to get any credit either way for Jared
Well,
Goff?
You're right.
Well, yeah, I think Detroit taking on Goff is crazy, isn't it? I mean, it's a really fascinating move for them to take on Goff as part of it, that they wanted him.
That's fascinating. There's the money involved is interesting, but I guess a team that is rebuilding is not going to be high in, you know, going nuts in the free agent market. So I guess they felt they could take it on. It also is interesting, a team that is so focused on blowing up the machine, in addition to having Goff in that contract, they only got in 2021 just a third round pick out of it. So the true, like, marquee draft picks don't come until next year. I guess if I'm a Lions fan, I don't know. I guess I feel okay about the trade. You got the draft assets out of it, and Goff is not anyone's idea of an exciting quarterback, but certainly you could do worse as a bridge guy. I would give the Lions the edge on the trade, but I also see how it could potentially backfire if Goff continues to regress. Everyone's going to look pretty bad, I think, in that building.
If you're a Lions fan, though, you've spent your entire fandom of a certain age watching, you know, Megatron play a long career in Detroit and nothing came of it. Barry Sanders, long career in Detroit, retired earlier than he needed to. Nothing came from it. Matthew Stafford, another piece like that. So Jared Goff is a bridge. I love what Brad Holmes did to get the draft picks. I think he learned a lot from Les Snead and got a lot of value from Les Snead. And they honestly, I know this won't happen, but if you look at the whole Deshaun Watson thing, Detroit is a, I don't think this would be the case, but you've got the draft picks to make a play for anything else in the league, to move up, to go for Deshaun Watson, to get the quarterback you want in the draft. I mean, I think Goff was, I do agree with the Brock Osweiler side of this to some degree, except that it might be a little bit more elongated where you get Goff for a year, but this is not their final destination under center.
Right. I think Goff is most likely going to struggle. I mean, I think he's set up to totally fail. And Dan Campbell is talking about, you're not going to be able to evaluate this team for a couple years. Like, that's the long game. And this is like, I don't think that works in the NFL. Like, we've seen teams with multiple draft picks, and, you know, if you have a great coach and a great front office that can put together a huge team, like, that's great. But it's not like the Dolphins are hitting on all these drafts. They've had a ton of draft picks. Some are working, some aren't. But you have to have, like, a great organization and build that up. And that's just whether Dan Campbell and Brad Holmes ultimately have the goods. Goff is set up for failure. And the last thing I just wanted to say on, like, the Goff contract was such a mistake. And I've seen a lot of people say, like, well, you know, the Rams shouldn't escape being blamed. Well, no, of course. They're admitting that they made a huge mistake. They made a massive mistake in giving Gurley that contract and Goff that contract. And they're doing the Patriots-like thing, which is, like, we're just going to get out of it. But, like, this trade is admitting that we made a horrible mistake with that contract, and this is the best way that we think we can get out of it and still compete next year. And they probably will. They have to really prepare for their defense to regress. I think that's part of it too. They're not expecting to be a dominant number one defense. The offense is going to have to be, like, a lot better.
It's amazing how quickly things changed with the Rams and their quarterback. Gentlemen, let's continue talking quarterbacks. There was an old book series, Choose Your Own Adventure. This was kind of like an 80s and 90s kids theme book where, Mark, I know you were a big fan of them. I used to read them all the time. Basically, you read the book, and then you have a fork in the road, and you actually get to choose where the story goes by navigating to the page that it tells you to go. They have it now with my kids. I watch it on, like, Netflix shows and stuff. They have these similar interactive type shows where you could choose to go one way or another, which is, you know, a sign of the times. We are going to do our own Choose Your Own Adventure, QB style. Mark, we're going to kind of go around, take turns, but you get us going, like, as we try to figure out what happens. We know Matt Stafford's in L.A. He's not going anywhere. Goff is in Detroit. He's unlikely to move. What's next in our adventure of quarterbacks in this very interesting offseason?
Well, it's my portion of the adventure, so I can start it as I wish. I think an adventure should be, you know, it can have some contrast and some issues, but it should be pleasant in the end. And I'm thinking, what makes me enjoy football? It's this show, doing this show. And so what would make this show more intriguing? How about this? Deshaun Watson. I had to think about this real hard because I think this is the next big piece to fall. It can't happen 2 months after free agency. It's happening at some point. The Texans say no. I don't believe anything the Texans say. So here's the thing. Deshaun Watson, not to the Niners, not to some other team. He's going to the New York Football Jets. All right. The Jets for so long.
There we go.
I don't think this fit a month ago. It's funny because we talked about this when these reports started to bubble up. And I thought the Jets with no coach and questions at ownership and a roster that needs help. I just don't see it. You can't wish cast them to New York. But Robert Saleh changes everything. Their draft capital makes them an ideal trade partner. And we don't need to go through the trade terms for all these things. But I would say that you've got to move three firsts. And I think maybe one other little additional pick. You get Deshaun Watson. Maybe they throw in like a nice 2027 seventh rounder is just a little tiny hors d'oeuvre for you down the road, the Jets. And maybe an autographed headshot of Jack Easterby. And there we go. The Deshaun Watson goes to New York. And bang, the adventure is off and running in Florham Park.
All right. I love it. Very interesting. We've talked about this a lot now because ever since the report down in Florida surfaced that the Jets were the preferred destination of Deshaun Watson, Rich Zimini of ESPN.com has since said that that's not necessarily the case. So I don't know where all this stands, but that doesn't matter because this is Choose Your Own Adventure. And in this reality, he has been moved to the New York Jets, changing everything. As I said, that would change everything. And it would be all because of the great Robert Saleh that had happened. Let me go next. Okay, so now the domino has fallen. The Jets have Deshaun Watson. The first thing they're going to do, let's say, maybe it cost them three first-round picks. Maybe that's what the cost was. Now they have Sam Darnold on their roster. The first thing that Joe Douglas is going to do is to recoup some lost draft assets. He moves Sam Darnold to the San Francisco 49ers. Kyle Shanahan quietly was looking for a fresh start at quarterback. So he sends a second-round pick back to the Jets for Sam Darnold. And now the 49ers have a situation because Jimmy Garoppolo got a nice contract a couple of years back, but he's been banged up and hurt a lot. I know he got to the Super Bowl last year, but apparently, like Sean McVay with the Rams, quietly unhappy with Garoppolo and thinks he can get the most out of Sam Darnold, who would be potentially a great fit in that West Coast offense. So Patrick Claibon, they now have two starting quarterbacks in that building. What happens next?
Well, the starting quarterback, if the 49ers believe in the acquisition of Sam Darnold, which of course happened because these are the adventures that we have selected today, then that takes away my landing spot for Matt Ryan to be reunited with Kyle Shanahan to play out the remainder of his contract with the Atlanta Falcons. So Matt Ryan needing a home, the Falcons looking for a new start with Justin Fields, one of the two quarterbacks from the outer Atlanta area in this draft, along with Trevor Lawrence. He is selected there, and Matt Ryan is traded to the Chicago Bears, where we see how Matt Nagy's offense will operate in the future, in the post-Trubisky world, where they have been looking for consistency. They've been looking for somebody who could perform. They tried to do that in Nick Foles. It did not work. The Matt Ryan era united with Julio Jones. Perhaps Julio could be on the move as well, the new era in Atlanta. But I would say Matt Ryan, Chicago bound, after we've seen a couple of these quarterbacks in this adventure, again, that we have chosen, that could potentially have been Bears at one time. finally, Matt Ryan in Chicago.
Spicy.
Wow.
All right. Okay. Let me just, before we get to Greg, let me just reset things here. Watson to the Jets. Darnold to the Niners. Matt Ryan to the Bears. Mm-hmm. So now we have two quarterbacks in San Francisco and an opening in Atlanta with a lot of draft capital. Greg.
Yeah, I think this would be a tough, you know, test of the Kyle Shanahan, John Lynch, the trust in San Francisco. Because, you know, there's some thought they might want Kirk Cousins, their old buddy. You know, they don't get Matt Ryan. They do get Sam Darnold. And then there's no point of having Jimmy G. So you just call up Bill Belichick, who never really lost his love for Jimmy G. And, you know, Bill loves a deal. He just loves how it looks that he traded Jimmy G for a second-round pick. And he sends, you know, he gets a third-round pick to get him back. He sends a third-round pick to get him back. They would be thrilled.
Third round? Wow.
Third round. I mean, no one's given up that much for these guys. I don't think Garoppolo on this contract. Maybe a second or third round. Maybe it's that second rounder. Either way, he returns to New England, and they have some faith that he fit well in their system. Did not in Kyle Shanahan's, but I think they'll evaluate him based on what they know about him, and they loved him. And I think that is the quarterback. If the Bill Belichick gets his choice of choosing all of his adventures this offseason, that's just my suspicion, is that's his number one choice, is getting Jimmy G back for a relatively affordable price, and that's how they move forward.
Greg, you know, I have to say, you know, I enjoyed the report that surfaced that Matthew Stafford said, I will literally go to any team but the Patriots. And I know in a way that hurt you, because you're thinking to yourself, man, things have changed. In New England, it might not be a place people want to play anymore.
Well, I think this is like a lot of Patriots stories. You've thought about it a lot more than I have. But yeah, sure. This is what happens when you bring Matt Patricia back. I mean, who needs Matt Patricia? That's for sure. I mean, I did not look for, you know,
Matt Patricia would be nowhere near that quarterback room.
Right, but that was part of the reason, Matthew Stafford. Yeah, if you're Matthew Stafford, you want to stay away from him. I don't think that was – it does sound like there was a lot of teams in on Stafford. We didn't get into that. There was about six or seven teams, you know, if we're to trust Albert Breer's reporting, and why wouldn't I? It's really interesting who went hard after him. The Patriots were very not in the ballpark of the Panthers or the Rams, who went super hard. They were trying to get him for cheap. Right, they weren't even close, so it wouldn't have mattered.
Do we want to keep going here, Mark? Do you have another spin?
I do. I think
okay,
that.
Go ahead.
Yeah, when
Let's go around one more.
When Deshaun Watson went to the Jets, if I had to guess who would be the most annoyed person out there, I would go Carolina Panthers owner David Tepper. I think they're going to make a hard push for that. I think they want a quarterback that they can basically go right into the skies with. I mean, we saw the Teddy Bridgewater signing. I don't think it's about let's draft someone. So here's what I've cooked up here. Tell me what you think. The Dallas Cowboys have a Dak Prescott situation, okay? And Dak Prescott in the shadows right now is annoyed, okay? Like, A, you signed everyone else on your offense to long-term deals while leaving Dak Prescott out there. He gets hurt. Jerry Jones says a bunch of nice things about, hey, we're going to bring him back. We're going to sign him. He's our quarterback forever. Uh-uh. In this offseason, something stunning will occur, all right? This is what I predict will happen, that the Carolina Panthers, they will, number one, wiggle their way up in the draft from number 8 to number 3, the Dolphins pick. They will use some draft capital, and everyone's thinking, oh, they're going to go after their guy at number 3, whether that's Justin Fields, whether that's, you know, it could be anyone, whoever they like. It's going to be a quarterback, though.
Zach Wilson, instead,
they basically ship that pick along with other draft picks to the Cowboys for Dak Prescott. They solved that situation for the Cowboys, who are in a bad, like, it's like a Deshaun Watson super light scenario. There's not, it's not quite as nefarious, but Dak Prescott, who has been franchised by the Cowboys, goes and signs a new deal with Carolina for 5 years. They've got their quarterback forever, and the Dallas Cowboys use that number 3 pick. And we can get into the draft stuff later, but I would peg them as taking Justin Fields at number 3 with the New York Jets out of the mix for a quarterback at number 2.
Mm.
All right.
Love
Very
it.
Very interesting. Let's stay in the NFC East then. The Philadelphia Eagles, you know, there's a love affair, obviously, with Howie Roseman and management and Carson Wentz, we're told, and they chose Wentz over Doug Peterson on some level. Well, that's all smokescreen. They got to trade Wentz. They got to get him out of there. They're trying to keep his value up. I know it's cost prohibitive with some of the certain things with the cap, but they'll figure out a way and get the fresh start and move forward with Jalen Hurts and Nick Sirianni as the head coach. So they send Carson Wentz to the Indianapolis Colts, a Colts team that just had a one-year experiment with Philip Rivers. And I read a report this week that the Colts are not looking to bring in some rookie to groom. No, they believe they have a Super Bowl window that's open right now. They want a veteran quarterback, and follow the dots here. Of course, Frank Reich, the offensive coordinator of the Super Bowl champion Eagles, is the head coach of the Colts. If Frank Reich can't fix Carson Wentz, nobody can. So he gets that fresh start in Indy, and the Eagles also desperately get the fresh start they need and get that toxic business. Not necessarily Wentz. Mm. I'm not saying he's toxic, but the entire situation is toxic with the new head coach and these two quarterbacks. Get rid of that problem, and you get maybe a first-round pick out of it.
Mm. Woo, first round, man. It'll be tough, but it wouldn't shock me. It really wouldn't. I think one thing people missed on the Nick Sirianni presser after they were done kind of making fun of him, you know, and being a little nervous was – man, they were noncommittal about Carson Wentz. I have not bought this narrative that they're only hiring the head coach to rehabilitate Carson Wentz. The fact that they're putting him and Jalen Hurts on the same footing, that they hired a QB coach with a history with Jalen Hurts. I think if they can get the right offer, and that just might be any offer for Carson Wentz, I think they might move on from him. So I don't think that's a crazy one at all.
It feels like, if anything, they've done whatever they can to pump up or, you know, not allow his trade value to sink even further. If it's clear you're moving on, you get him for nothing. But if it's like, this is our dude, we've got his life-size poster in Howie Roseman's office, everyone loves him. Oh, we wouldn't think of trading him, but you blew us away with an offer. Well, there you go.
All right, Claybon, you are up. The Denver Bronco fans are like, please talk about us. We don't believe in Drew Lock anymore. Please give us something new.
And that's the problem, Dan, because I think they do believe in Drew Lock. And so they stick with Drew Lock going into another season of all of this chaos is going on. Everybody's moving around. The Denver Broncos are sticking, and they are true to Drew Lock. They are locked onto him, if you will. But all the turmoil going on in the South, the Dallas Cowboys, as Mark said, have their eyes on a quarterback. But they also need a bridge. They need a bridge to get to Justin Fields. They would like to wait in this circumstance, in this adventure that we are chosen, that we have lived in. And it just so turns out that there's another quarterback that's been maligned in this very trade situation with the Carolina Panthers, and that is Teddy Bridgewater, finding another team in another year in another, oddly enough for him, bridge situation. Teddy Bridgewater back in the South. and the Dallas Cowboys in a loaded offense with so much talent around him trying to fend off the rookie Justin Fields. It's going to be something for them to talk about in the metropolitan area down there.
There is a irony to Teddy Bridgewater's career becoming the ultimate bridge quarterback. I love that. The bridge over the water. Here's my one thing on that. Don't they already have like one of the top bridge quarterbacks in the league in Andy Dalton? I know he's entering free agency.
He's a free agent.
He knows the offense. He did some things.
The man is.
Do
man
we think that Bridgewater
synonymous.
Is a big upgrade on Andy Dalton? I don't know. Yeah. I don't.
Well, he's going to start for the Broncos, so you know. Get excited, Denver. No, I'm not really doing that, but who knows? There might be a market. There might be a market for Andy Dalton services, but I'm going to throw in one last one while we're talking bridge quarterback. One of my favorite, little subplots, just following Saints Twitter, talk about, you know, things change fast. They change fast in New England after Brady died. I mean, after Brady left.
Wait a second.
Yeah. I'm saying his career after he died.
Much.
Yes, it did.
Everything makes more sense now. Everything makes more sense. Go
after,
ahead.
Let's like bye-bye after that. After that all went away. The new trend, like people are worried that they're going to lose Jameis Winston. They're like, I don't know. There might be competition for Jameis Winston. And I say no. I say you live on. Jameis resigns with the Saints and puts Taysom Hill on the bench. And we're going to get
Tom Brady died.
Jameis Winston. Hey, that's what that's what Tom Brady Sr. said, right? That these careers, they never end well. So
I mean, or there are like, it's like, oh, Tom Brady, you could split his career into three parts and he's a Hall of Famer. It's like, that's maybe us. There are just like the real Tom Brady who his human body ran out like in 2007. And we've got, you know, multiple sort of synthetic half robot versions of Tom Brady being opened up and released every 4 or 5 years.
Greg,
it's like the prestige.
You did noble
There's
work.
Just a new one all the time.
You did noble work, Greg, soldiering on there after that incredible revelation about like what goes on in your mind. Can you say it again though? Because I wasn't able to process the other football.
What
stuff.
He's on the mass turn. He's under the mass turnpike with those balls and Peter McNally, the Deflategate guy.
No, you said something about Jameis Winston.
Oh yeah, he's gonna return to New Orleans. They're a little worried that they might lose him, but I say no. Gotcha. I want to see Jameis Winston in this scenario, and that he ends up being their QB. That's all I need.
And I will put a cap on it by saying that the Broncos will give Drew Lock the same 4-year, $134 million extension with $110 million guaranteed. That the Rams gave to Jared Goff in September 2019. So you don't have any issues.
That's going to happen.
It's mean.
One little note that the listeners should pay attention to. While we were doing this segment, Tom Pelissero reported that the Falcons intend to trade Matt Ryan during the 2021 season or year leading up to it. So I'm just telling you that, you know, you maybe just can take a nap during the entire offseason. We might have mapped out everything that will occur.
Absolutely. It was the total opposite. Before we move on, the report from Tommy P was the Falcons do not intend to trade Matt Ryan.
I read it wrong.
Nobody intends to trade anybody.
I read it wrong.
Gettleman didn't sign Odell to trade him. So
all right,
it's a live show.
Live
I was attempting to spin it.
Patrick, this is when we say goodbye to you. You are a busy man. You have to be on the network and be. Now you have to put on your Tom Brokaw hat. And you have to be the face of the news operation. We thank you, though, for your opinions, your levity, and your general disposition, which is always pleasant.
Oh, thanks, Gus. all the same to you, and I look forward to a fun Super Bowl week of watching y'all's coverage. Virtually, as we do.
Very good. All right. Coming up next, we have Gene Deckerhoff.
Ball contact goes towards the end zone. It is a caught ball. Touchdown, Tampa Bay, Mike Evans. What a way to start the football game in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Gets a block on the right side. Then another block to the 5-3-2-1. Touchdown, Tampa Bay. Touchdown, Buccaneers. Fournette refused to go down. Scotty Miller in the open. Makes the catch. Touchdown, Tampa Bay. Scotty Scooter Miller. And Brady puts it right on the spot. Godwin running to the... There, he's got the first down. Bucs are going to win this football game. Bucs win. Tampa Bay is heading to the Super Bowl.
Oh, my goodness. I can't even begin to tell you how excited we are to have this man on the show right now. Every Sunday night, the flagship program when we play the highlights. He was the unquestioned play-by-play MVP of the 2020 season. You know exactly who I'm talking about. It's Gene Deckerhoff, WFUS. Welcome to the Around the NFL podcast. Seriously, Gene, we're pumped up right now.
Yeah, be pumped up. How about this? You got Mitch Holteis doing the touchdown Kansas City and touchdown Tampa Bay. Fire the cannon. We can't fire the cannons at Super Bowl 55. I wish we could. And by the way,
that's
those
a
calls,
bump. Gee.
Those calls, yeah, and those calls a week ago, the cannon powder wouldn't fire in 28-degree weather in Green Bay, Wisconsin. No, we didn't have cannons.
Gene, so we're good friends with Matt Money Smith, who is the voice of the Chargers. You mentioned Mitch Holteis over with the Chiefs. It feels like a fraternity with the radio guys. Are there rivalries? Are there some play-by-play guys that don't get along? Or are you all buddy-buddy? Are there meetups in non-pandemic times? Take us inside the world.
Well, I know this, that during the pandemic, we have remote broadcast, so I haven't had a chance to visit with some of my colleagues that broadcast. But Mitch, I first met Mitch when he broadcast Kansas State football and basketball, and a coach by the name of Lon Kruger had been at Kansas State and had taken the job at Florida, and I was working television at the time, Channel 6, a CBS affiliate in Tallahassee, and so I called, and Mitch was, I did an interview with Mitch via the phone talking about, you know, Lon Kruger and what kind of coach, and Mitch at that time said, I never thought Lon would leave Kansas State, but he did. So then probably about 5-6 years after that conversation, Mitch became the voice of the Kansas City Chiefs, and he's been doing a great job ever since. And he did a Super Bowl last year. He's got a chance to do back-to-back Super Bowls, and I go 18 years in between Super Bowls. I don't know if I'll be around another 18 years, fellas.
Gene's been doing it, boys and listeners out there, since 1989. For the Bucks, and he also double dips with Florida State, where he's the voice of FSU. So Gene is a legend down there in Florida.
Oh yeah, I learned all this on GeneDeckerhoff.com. People should check out this website. It's hot. I mean, poor Gene, they got him working Florida State BC Eagles Tuesday night. Feels like that's going to be a letdown. I am curious, Gene, like, because you know Tampa more than anyone. Like, I don't think people from the outside knows what the Tampa sports scene is like. Like, what would another Bucks championship look like? Because you guys are kind of the city of champions right now, or at least making the championship. This is three in the last year that you've made the finals.
Yeah, the Tampa Bay Lightning, you know, won the championship in the National Hockey League. The Stanley Cup was held high over Tampa Bay. And I'll tell you what, the Tampa Bay Rays came oh so close to winning a World Series. So they finished second, I guess, to the Dodgers. And here we are, the Tampa Bay Buccaneer football team. We're playing for the Super Bowl championship and trying to add one more Lombardi trophy. I heard Mayor Caster on NFL Super Bowl channel on Sirius Satellite Radio last night, and she was talking about, you know, this is the city of champions. This is Titletown, Tampa, Florida. And the Toronto Raptors are playing out of Tampa because of the COVID pandemic in Canada. And she said they're going to try to lure them back down to Tampa after the pandemic is over. Hey, Titletown sounds appropriate. We just played in Titletown, Green Bay, just north of the Florida border where I live in Tallahassee, which is about 28 miles to the Georgia border. But Valdosta is known as Wintersville, USA, for their high school football program over there. So, yeah, a lot of titles being thrown around.
That's salt in the wound, Gene, to Packers fans that are listening to our national broadcast right now.
Well, they want 18, 19 championships. How many more do they need, you know?
Well, that's fair. That's fair. I think just reading about some of the stuff you've done, we mentioned Florida State. You had a show with Bobby Bowden, who I grew up, you know, that's sort of the earliest inroads I had with college football, and that you worked with Burt Reynolds, of all people, and now you're announcing games with Tom Brady. Do you still love football as much as you did when you started all this? Is it still as much of a joy to you to cover it?
You know, my wife keeps telling me, you work too hard. I'm always in my office, which is in my home. And she's retired. She's been retired 10 years. She says, you work too hard. Why do you work all the time? Can't you spend time with me? And I said, you know, honey, if I was hammering nails or drilling rivets, I probably would have retired 10 years ago. But I'm doing something that I really love to do, and that is broadcast sports events, particularly football. And, by the way, I'm a basketball Jones. I played basketball. I never played football. But, I enjoy broadcasting sports events, and I hope to keep doing it for a while. The Lord will tell me when I have to stop, and he hasn't told me yet.
Mm. You know, Gene, I mean, Mark mentioned it. I have to ask, and unfortunately he passed away in 2018, but Burt Reynolds, one of the all-time legends, he used to appear on the Bobby Bowden Show with you as the host. And do you have any Burt stories? Did you ever hang out socially with Reynolds?
Oh, I've got a lot of Burt stories. Rest in peace.
Give
Buddy
us
Reynolds.
One.
Buddy Reynolds, 82, and his college teammate at Florida State University back in the 50s was a fellow by the name of Vic Prenzi, and they were best friends, stayed friends after Burt went off to star in movies and everything. They stayed, and Vic and I broadcast Florida State football. And then when the USFL came into being, the Tampa Bay Bandits, the franchise in Tampa, was part owner was Burt Reynolds. And Vic and I did their games because of the relationship Vic had with Burt. And we're broadcasting a game in Phoenix, Arizona. I had just taken the job to produce Coach Bowden's TV show and also act as talent and continue the play-by-play announcing. And he would always come up and do a halftime interview. And we're in Arizona. I'll never forget Sun Devil Stadium in Tempe is where the Arizona franchise played. And Burt comes up to the booth, and everybody in that stadium, they weren't watching the halftime show. They were waving to Burt Reynolds in the press box, and he was waving back. And when I got back to Tallahassee, I dropped a note in the mail. I said, thanks, you know, so much for coming on at halftime. It was always great seeing you. And I've got an idea about Bobby Bowden's television show that I'm now producing. And would you be interested in doing a few things for Bobby? And he sent a letter back. I wished I had that letter today. I don't. I don't know what happened to it. But he said, anything Bobby needs, you just let me know. And I came up with great moments in Florida State football and wrote the scripts and did the research. And we recorded in Jupiter, Florida. We recorded in Beverly Hills three, four times. We had a place in Bel Air. We recorded there once, just in the L.A. area. And one time we did it in Atlanta on a location when he was doing a Cop and a Half. We did in Tampa. He was doing another movie in the Miami area, and we went down there and met all the stars that were in the movie and everything. But it was a great relationship. He did that for 26 consecutive years. Now you add that up. If he was getting SAG fees, we'd have been paying a fortune.
Wow, the Cop and a Half reference. That I remember that. It was Burt Reynolds as a cop. Yes, and a young, precocious kid as his partner in crime about 1991.
He said after that, PJ Fellows, he said after that, don't ever star in a movie with a youngster because they steal the scenes.
That's true.
Do you have a favorite call from this year's team? Like, you know, either a favorite call, just a favorite moment from these 2020 Bucks, or like a moment you realize, wow, this team actually might be as good as we thought, as we hoped going into the year, or they might even be better.
In 32 years of traveling from Tallahassee to Tampa, it's a 4.5-hour drive, and my wife and I make it every Sunday for home games, obviously this year. But back on November the 15th, the one and only time I've had an accident driving to a Tampa Bay Buccaneers game, I ran over a mud puddle that dropped off about 1.5 feet, and I'm dragging metal for the next 77 miles to Raymond James Stadium, and I'm glad I got there. It didn't spark on the turnpike, didn't explode the vehicle, but we got to the stadium, and I got there and was fortunate to broadcast the only 98-yard touchdown run in the history of Buccaneers franchise.
Brady, hard count, hands the ball off. Rojo pops it free, across the 10 to the 15, 20. Rojo to the 30, Rojo to the 40, Rojo to the 50, Rojo to the 40, Rojo to the 30, high 7 to the 20. It'll be a 98-yard touchdown run by Ronald Jones the second. Touchdown Tampa Bay.
That was Rojo. Rojo to the 30, Rojo to the 20, Rojo touchdown Tampa Bay. 98-yard touchdown run. It's in Carolina, but we broadcast from Tampa. But that has to be the highlight. Now, almost every one of the touchdowns in the postseason this year have been really, really outstanding plays by outstanding players. But, you know, it's not just the touchdowns. I know the highlights package that you had was touchdown Tampa Bay, touchdown Tampa Bay, Bucks are going to the Super Bowl. But there were two or three third down plays in the New Orleans game and also in the Green Bay game where the Buccaneers converted. You had guys answer. We had a rookie by Tyler Johnson. I mean, goodness. Two games in a row, he's made huge third down catches from Tom Brady. And Scooter Miller, Tom gave him the nickname. It's Scotty Miller, but he calls him Scooter. But he made a big play at every goal. These are guys you don't hear about a lot, but they have been very, very instrumental in the Buccaneers advancing to Super Bowl 55.
I mean, do you ever just sort of walk around your house and maybe, you know, the wife is taking out a can of peas. She's opening it and putting it in a bowl. I mean, do you get lured into that kind of chatter around the household, or do you keep the announcer stuff to the booth?
Nah, not too good play-by-play in household chores, but I do find myself, I have to confess, I talk to myself. And I say, gee, you're talking to yourself. Come on. Well, you know, that's what I get paid to do is talk. But no, I don't do play-by-play on my wife's. But basically, you're talking to the guy that carries out the trash, does the dishes, does the cooking. No, Ann does a little bit of that. But no play-by-play at home.
That's funny. There's a story out there right now, kind of a scary story, in fact, that because of the pandemic and there are far fewer flights, that pilots are falling out of practice because they're not getting enough air hours. That will never happen with Gene and his play-by-play call. One last question, because I know you're a busy man, Gene. November 29th, the Bucks fall to the Chiefs, second consecutive 27-24 loss. They enter their bye at 7-5. They obviously haven't lost since. Back around Thanksgiving time, which I'm sure you were in the house and handling the bird and doing all this stuff because you're a man. Did you still see this as a possible outcome as a Super Bowl team, the Bucks?
Well, you know, this pandemic season, we have a large family. I have six grandchildren. I have three sons and their wives. But this was the first Thanksgiving and the first Christmas that we have not gotten together as a family. Social distancing, no big crowds. Mm-hmm. And so you had that as a downer. And then you drive to Tampa and Kansas City lays one of those 27-24 things on you. And in that first quarter, I was about ready to wave the white flag. Tyreek Hill had 203 yards receiving. It scored two touchdowns and the first quarter was still going on. So it was a down event for the family, a down event for the announcer. And but then, you know, you mentioned the following week was the bye week for the latest bye week that I can remember. It's got to be the latest bye week the Bucks have ever had. And I don't know what happened during that bye week. If it's, you know, the NFL is a grind not so much on announcers, but on the players themselves and the coaches. And I think getting away from football for a couple of days, maybe getting fresh legs for a couple of days before getting back into the grind, it certainly benefited the Buccaneers. As you mentioned, we have not lost since then. Seven straight wins going for our eighth in a row. And, if you go into the Buccaneer media guide, you can't find seven wins in a row anywhere. Go all the way back to 76. We got six in a row once under Tony Dungy, but seven in a row. Counting postseason, we won the month of December, undefeated in December for the first time in franchise history. We only played three games, but hey, I'll take it. That's a good one.
You'll take it.
But something happened during that bye that has made this a more complete football team. And we fell. We beat Minnesota out of the bye. We went to Atlanta and fell behind 17-0. Now, take the bye week, okay? Refreshed, get out of the grind. Go on the road to a rival team in the NFC South. Get behind 17-0. And then come back and win that football game. The combination of those two, I think, has elevated the Buccaneers to the most confident I've seen the Bucs play and most complimentary offense, defense, special teams since I've been broadcasting Tampa Bay Buccaneer football. And it's a thing of beauty when a team gets hot and a team gets confident. I mean, there's no better thing in the world than to play that game or broadcast that game and say, touchdown, Tampa Bay. I'd like to say that about five times.
All right. Awesome. So very exciting, Gene, and best of luck, of course, in the game. It's not your first Super Bowl, as you noted, but I'm sure there's butterflies and excitement building up to it, and we wish you well. And one final factoid about Gene Deckerhoff, that people need to know why this man's a legend. He was inducted into the Florida Sports Hall of Fame in 2000. That was 21 years ago, and the man is still on top of his game.
Wow. I'm gonna have to dust that little. I'm gonna have to dust that little plaque off. It's over here in my office, and I'm gonna have to dust it. It's 21 years old. I'm gonna have to dust the thing off. Put a little bit of that furniture polish on.
Hey, that plaque can drink legally.
It's always great talking Buccaneer football. It's been a big part of my life for 32 years, and hopefully a little while longer. And I called one Super Bowl, and here's what broadcasters should never do, fellas. It's late in the third quarter. We're wearing out the Oakland Raiders. We finally went 48-21. But we've got like a 31-3 lead, and Dwight Smith picks off a pass from Rich Gannon, runs it right down the gut of the field and scores a touchdown. And while he's running to the end zone, I said, Smith got the interception. He's going to score a touchdown. The Bucs are going to win the Super Bowl, and it's only the third quarter. Rich Gannon then threw three touchdown passes. And all of a sudden, that margin got to like 11. I'm saying, my, how could you say such a thing? And then Dwight picked off another pass, and Craig picked off another, and the Bucks won soundly 48-20. But don't ever say, the Bucks are going to win the Super Bowl. This is only the third. I will say that, Sonny. I promise.
Good tip.
All right. There again, another Gene learns from his past to be great in his future. Gene, thank you very much. And again, right, good luck. Can't wait for the game.
Go Bucks. Stay Thanks, well Gene. And stay safe. Wear a mask and social distance, fellas.
All right.
Thank you.
That's a touchdown, Tampa Bay.
Gene Deckerhoff, what a performance. And we can't lose when it comes to the Sunday night flagship program. The next time the end of this season, you will hear us either come into the game and the show with Mitch Holtis or Gene Deckerhoff. Either way, you can't lose.
Or maybe your impersonation of Mitch Holtis or Gene Deckerhoff, which have been spot on, especially the Deckerhoff.
I mean, icing on the cake, yes.
Here is our week to come before we say goodbye for Tuesday. Tomorrow, Wednesday, we have a very special Q&A with fans of the Around the NFL podcast. Unfortunately, if you're not in on the guest list, you can't get in. But if you are, we can't wait to see you and to talk to you and to have a grand old time on Wednesday. I don't know what we're calling it, the ATN Fan Hero Summit. I don't know. It's a little late in the game to brand it, but that's what we'll call it. Thursday is going to be our official preview of Super Bowl 55. We have a bunch of great guests lined up for that show. So we're going to blow that out and make our official predictions for the big game. And then, yes, Sunday night, we will be back the final show of the 2021 season, Super Bowl recap, and can't wait for it. And also Sky Sports. We'll be doing a bunch of stuff with Sky this week. So it's all looking good. And what did we learn here today? Tom Brady dead, maybe to one man. Tom Brady's dead. To everyone else, still alive.
I've been Matt rooting Ryan. For him this whole season. I was on the bandwagon. I picked him each time in these games,
know.
By the way.
Freud,
you kind of told on yourself a little bit there.
Who was, Greg. You know, who I was, what did we used to call it when we were on an island? A hero pick with the Bucks the last 2 weeks. So give me a break.
You just said the guy was dead. So I don't know. It kind of undercuts some of your rooting interest in him this season. Matt Ryan will not be traded. That we also have out there.
Yeah, that's
that
good.
To be known.
Good to know.
Thank you to everyone for watching, and this is Dan Hansa signing off for Quiet Storm, the old boss, Patrick Claibon, Ricky Hollywood, and the whole gang. Until Thursday.